WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. House Speaker Mike Johnson's calling for Columbia University's president to resign if pro-Palestinian protesters aren't cleared from campus.
As Columbia has allowed these lawless agitators and radicals to take over, the virus of anti-Semitism is spread across other campuses.
USC shut down its main campus today in L.A. Several students were arrested there. At least 20 were cuffed at the University of Texas at Austin. Hamas has released video of an American hostage. CBS's Linda Gradstein.
His parents said that watching the video was overwhelming for them. And on one hand, they're very encouraged, but they are worried about his health and well-being.
The Supreme Court heard an abortion case on access during medical emergencies today from Idaho. CBS's Jan Crawford.
The court is very deeply divided on this, and I don't think after the arguments, which lasted a good 2 hours, we have a clear sense of what the court is going to do.
CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The head of Wisconsin's high school sports governing body says the conversation about name, image, and likeness deals is just beginning. A vote on a proposed NIL amendment to the WIAA Constitution failed today. 31 states allow NIL deals for high schoolers, including Minnesota and Illinois. Use of restraints and seclusion in Wisconsin schools went down about 8% last year. That's according to the State Department of Public Instruction. The DPI's Tim Pirenboom says it happens most with elementary schoolers with disabilities.
Frequent use of seclusion restraint is usually a symptom of larger, more systemic issues, whether that's staffing shortages or lack of proper training.
Pirenboom says most schools report no cases of using seclusion or restraint. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Geldwin Window Manufacturing Company has officially filed notice with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development that it will begin laying off employees on June 10th. The Rusk County facility employed about 340 people who will be laid off as the company consolidates its production into an Illinois facility. Wisconsin state data shows the county had only a total of about 1,300 manufacturing jobs, so the loss of 340 of those jobs is a major hit to the industry. The notice was filed on Monday. The Eau Claire City Council voted on a resolution to disallow a claim filed against the city regarding an officer-involved shooting in 2022. The claim was filed by Clayton Livingston for an incident in 2022 where he allegedly pointed a gun at police at his home before being shot. The disallowing of the claim does not prohibit Livingston from going forward with a lawsuit against the city, but does shorten the amount of time he has to move forward with it. Livingston will now have 6 months to file the lawsuit when he receives the notice. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Bucks lose to the Pacers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Pacers beat the Bucks 125-108. The series now tied one game apiece. On Sunday, the Bucks dominated Indiana. What was the difference? Doc Rivers.
They said we couldn't play defense. We did that in the first game. They said they couldn't play defense. They did that in the second game. I thought it was more our offense versus their defense than the other way. And I thought that bled over to the defense. So I thought it was more our offense tonight.
Pacers guard Tyrese Halliburton is a native of Oshkosh, but says his family was mistreated in Milwaukee.
You know, this has been my little brother in the stands the other day was, called the N-word. And so, like, it was important for us as a family, like, to just address that. And that was important for us to talk about because that just didn't, that didn't sit right with anybody in our, in our family.
That's the Pacers' Tyrese Halliburton with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, more sunshine with a few clouds in the afternoon and warmer. Highs to the mid-60s. Then rain rolls into the area tomorrow night and Friday, becoming breezy as well. Highs upper 50s. And more showers and storms around for the weekend and cooler. Right now it's 53.
The Todd Alba Show.
Luke, I'm just going to say it again. The real problem here was that goofy in-season soccer tournament that they had. That threw everything
off. What are you talking about? That was December bad. basketball. You just couldn't figure out the rules.
You're exactly
Todd.
Right. There are goofy rules I couldn't figure out. I don't like them.
You would not do well with driving on the left-hand side of the road.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely
you would just start freaking out.
Yeah.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
On my next show, the celebration of Earth Week continues. I'm going to be joined by Carrie Schumann, Executive Director of Wisconsin Conservation Voters. Don't miss it.
Weekdays 2 till 4 p.m. This is 93.5 The Tap.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number's 855-752-4842. Wednesday Educators Amplified in the house.
Teacher
Joanna, Teacher Hallie, Johnny's here. Johnny, again, for the big announcement last night, April 30th, man, Minocqua Brewing, Busted Pencils Live, live broadcast from the Minocqua Brewing Tap Room in Madison. Johnny, you know why? Because Busted Pencils is sponsored by Minocqua Brewing Company. Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. We are so happy. The partnership, the announcement, the connection between Minocqua Brewing and Busted Pencils. Yes, live event. We will be there. Yeah, doing the show live from the Minocqua Brewing Tap Room in Madison, 6 o'clock, Tuesday, April 30th. Johnny Lupinacci, Slecker, you name it. Everybody else. I tell you what, there's been a
guests.
I'm thinking, you know, maybe not the red carpet this time, but, you know, there's some paparazzi, though, that are already starting to hang out and trying to get pictures out here in front of my house in Ohio. I think they're paparazzi. I don't know. Maybe who knows what they are. Hey, it's I'm so looking forward to this. And we said, you know, yeah, this will be interesting because secret. I don't know if we reveal this, but there's an interesting fact. Maybe we'll put this out there tonight. Anybody wants to call in and know this interesting fact? There's something about Johnny and Tim that they have never done before that will actually happen. And so if you can figure out what that is, that's something Tim and Johnny have never done before. There's probably lots of things we haven't done before, but together.
Right, it's pretty open.
Yeah, this is pretty vague, Tim.
Give us a factoid here on the show. Give us a call. Let us know. And if you're right, you know, show up at the event. Hey, might have some free swag for you. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. The number is 855-752-4842. It is Wednesday night, though. Educators Amplified are in the house. Teacher Joanna, yes. Teacher Hallie. Coming at this, typically doing, you know, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you know, home turf types of things. But this news coming out of Tennessee, it's just too raw. We have to be there. And so kind of springing it on everybody it's not new, but you've been following it, but we didn't rehearse this. I wanted you all to come at this truly from a reaction state. So out of K-12 Dive, I'm going to use that to read from: Tennessee lawmakers approved concealed handguns for teachers. Teachers in Tennessee will be able to carry concealed guns on school campus as long as they undergo additional training in school policing under a bill passed Tuesday by the state's General Assembly. They plan on the governor could veto it, but they don't see that happening. This is following the March 2023, so almost a year or a little bit over a year ago, mass shooting at Covenant School in Nashville, where three students and three staff members were killed. Governor Lee pushed for legislative action to address school violence and to increase gun safety. His firearm control measures earned ire from Republicans, who said any red flag law is a non-starter. Not exactly sure what that means. The bill that passed this week was put on pause for nearly a year, but now we're going to arm teachers. It's SB 1325, also known with the companion bill HB 1202, would require that participating teachers, well, they have to go under a, they have to have a psychological test, though, before they can carry guns. All right. So there it is. We've been dealing with school shootings now. What, you know, Columbine back, what, 20 years ago, you name it, they've been one. The Parkland shooting. I know people who listen to the Busted Pencils, the podcast, sadly, how close do these things connect, that one of the activist friends that I did the opt out with, her son was actually got away safely in the Parkland shooting, but was there, and I interviewed his mom the day after that happened. Too often, too frequent, we've seen this. And here we are in Tennessee now saying, well, then the way we stop gun violence is with gun violence. That's the way I read this. It's like, you want to stop gun violence? You just need a better gun, and you need somebody to be able to handle that gun better. Because to me, this is the admission of saying, look, we're not willing to do anything to take care of school violence, school shooters. The whole idea going here, we're just simply giving up and saying, you know what, teachers, have your guns. If something happens, take them out first. Try to minimize the damage. Johnny, you think I'm making too light of this.
I don't think you are. We'll get into it because, I mean, Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna here tonight, and in thinking about this from the perspective of being a teacher,
classroom.
Also, I'm going to dive in if we get into this. This is on the fly, Tim, but I want to dive into some of the details, because immediately when this hit, I did start reading about it, because I kind of fall in a gray area on this, and that's there's no question about it that I think schools should be gun-free zones. But our communities aren't, and that gets really slippery. And so I'm not in any way advocating for guns in schools, but I want to go over some of the Tennessee legislation, because good school leaders can still say no guns in our schools.
So I get it. Okay. So
this is one of those Second Amendment rights things we're going to get into, where it's way, way more political. But again, in the crosshairs, literally pun intended tonight, are children and teachers and people in schools, and that is just no way safe. So we'll get into it, but I want to be like clear. There's some details around this that make me kind of be like, I mean, like, we are getting into
okay. But here's the best part about this is, I'm, and I know that, right, John, you're not a hunter or anything like that. I go out, kill stuff, put it on the table. You don't do that. I'm looking at this and going, like, there's nothing gray in here. This is a stupidness. Let's go. Wait, Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna, though. It's Educators Amplified night. Teacher Joanna, you want to go out and start packing to go to school the next day?
Well, as you're talking, of course, I'm literally taking deep breaths. Like, just hearing about it dysregulates me, and I've got to, like, whatever, because, and I would feel that I'm not reacting, I'm responding, because I'm really clear on, it's from a clear space to me, that gun violence is the number one killer of children.
Yep.
And just that, like, as an educator, that's all. I don't even need to think about myself. I need to think about my babies, and my babies can range from 3 years old to 21 in our K-12 schools, that it's already the number one killer. And that's a really sad, tragic fact. And so to bring that in the space where there's a concentration of our children, not adding up to me.
All right, Teacher Hallie.
Yeah, I found myself taking deep breaths, and like, logical thoughts will come in, like questioning and statistics, and where teachers are involved. Then emotional questions will come of like, I mean, it's wild to me. Like, my brain can't even take it on, besides being like, nothing feels good about it, because I'll try to, like, I've never been in an active shooter like scenario. I've done tons of practices, and those are scary enough, and especially trying to help children through that. But if I really try to think about being in it, I'm like, I think it's really short-sighted, where we're not thinking about, like, even seeing your teacher hold a gun is traumatic. Having a teacher have it in their holster is traumatic. Like, and so we're just adding more trauma to potentially a situation, you know, like, for me personally, I've never been in that situation. And so some children will never go through that situation, but then they potentially will now in Tennessee, because they're going to see their teacher have a gun. So I just, it boggles my mind, and it makes me really, really sad to think about.
So from a scientific standpoint, I'll drop some of my emotions, because I obviously have them here. The statistics around this, if we want to get into them, the reality of introducing a gun into a school with children, statistics, anytime, you know, people hate when I bring this one up, but as soon as you put a gun into the space that occupies people, the likelihood of a gun accident, guess what? It increases automatically. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's just it's people like, what are you saying? Guns kill people? Yeah, I am. I'm actually saying that when you put that physical thing in a space where there not used to be that physical thing, that now physical thing, the gun being in that space, statistically pushes up the percentages that stuff will go wrong. Man, I'm really biting on my tongue tonight, because boy, I could really use some choice language as we were really taking this through. Now, here's the one of the just the bill sponsor. Okay, I've got a quote from the bill sponsor. As the parent of public school kids, my kids are grown now. One of the biggest questions that people ask me all the time, have you done everything you could possibly do to make our schools safe across the state? I believe that this method is what I am doing to make schools safe. That's the sponsor parent saying, look, people are hounding me. They're asking me, what am I doing to make schools safe? I can walk out of the chamber today and proudly answer them, I have done something today to make your children safe. I have now made sure that if that teacher, and I'll even give Johnny some credit, if that teacher and that principal want to go through the training and want to agree to that, they can now make your child safe, because that teacher will be armed, and a good guy with a gun is way better than just a bad guy with a gun.
Well, it really opens the door too to like teacher blaming. Because yeah. I'm like, if they're giving teachers the choice, which number one, I'm like, wow, now teachers get a choice for something. But if a teacher chooses,
you want to have a gun.
Right. But if a teacher chooses not to, what are even the ramifications of that?
All these things come through. But, you know, the first thing it made me think is like, OK, but we're not going to let you choose your reading curriculum, though, darn it, because you guys are just not experienced enough to make curriculum decisions. We're going to give you a firearm that can take people out, you know, maybe a clip of 9 or something like that. So in case you could take 9 people out. But my goodness, we are not going to turn over the social studies curriculum. The social studies curriculum is just off limits to teachers. Let's give them guns. It's busted pencils. 855-752-4842. Well, in Tennessee, it's about to be legal. Do you have some thoughts, man? Love it. Bring it back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever-changing, and all of us with civic media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather-ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Are you making plans to honor Mother Earth? April 22nd is Earth Day, and it's a Wisconsin idea. Our Senator Gaylord Nelson created the day in 1970. It was his way of pushing environmental issues onto the national agenda. and many demonstrated in support. It worked. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency formed by December of that year. And today, Nelson's daughter, Tia, continues her dad's efforts. The Earth Day theme this year focuses on the use of plastics. It includes a reminder of the goal for a 60% reduction in the production of plastics by 2040. If you want to find a cleanup or education event to help during Earth Day week or anytime, check earthday.org. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
Yeah, you're going to hear the frustration in the music. That's the way I'm feeling tonight. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded. Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number's 855-752-4842. Gun violence, solution to gun violence. Well, in Tennessee, according to the lawmaker that sponsored the bill, he's just making kids safer. You can now, as a teacher, carry a gun through a conceal situation. Lots of details that we're going to get into here as we come forward with this to, you know, give it some sense. But the idea here, and Hallie, I'm not sure if this is where you were going, but to talking about this, the decision then, because Johnny said it'll be up to the teacher and the principal to make the decision as to whether they want to do that. So no one's going to say, Teacher Hallie, you have to carry a gun. You know what, though? I'm a little bit going with the, well, wait. So if I say no and something goes wrong, then I'm going to be blamed because I'm the teacher that said I didn't want a gun. And now, or the principal, what principal is going to step up and go, you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to bring guns in my school, and then deal with the pressure. All of these pressures and societal things, it's just a mess. Okay, we'll take a second, though. Joanne from Madison's on the line. Hopefully Joanne can give us some reasoning to think through this. Joanne, what's happening, our friend?
What an issue. I'm so appalled in so many different ways, but I have a practical question. I'm wondering about a personal insurance that school participants could carry so they could be defended if something went wrong. When I was teaching in a school that had, in a university that had AFT supporting it, we were, you know, if, as part of our AFT dues, we had $250,000 of personal insurance, you know, if something would go wrong, if we, you know, inappropriately touch a student or something like that. And at least we could have some legal defense along those lines. And I'm just wondering, has there been any mention of teachers would need to have some insurance so that they could defend themselves for what will inevitably happen? I mean, is somebody, a gun will go off in somebody's pants or something like that and scare people or whatever, it'll happen. So is this whole idea of insurance for liability for insurance passe? Maybe it's old school.
Joanne, thank you. No, actually, it's a really good question. Johnny, you're looking at the details. I don't want to be specific, but I did see concerns about that issue and saying that if a, quote, accidental thing happens, will the teachers have any ability to defend themselves? And if they will, and as you say, is there an insurance policy? Because if you're going to make me carry a gun, I might want like $250,000 worth of money behind it in case I do happen to shoot my own kneecap off. I could sue myself or something like that. I don't know. Johnny, get details.
Well, Tim, it's going to fall under the liability of having a concealed carry permit with some additional training that's required. And I'm not advocating for this. Like, I'm just going to be really clear from all angles. I think this is a terrible idea. And I think we'll pivot to like, what do we all mean by safety? Because we have four really experienced educators here who think really different about safety than, I'll call it out, the political agenda of the people putting this bill forward. This is really about arguing for Second Amendment rights and putting teachers and children right in the middle of this in a very dangerous way. So really, to be quite blunt with Joanne, I don't know the details of like how the teachers unions in Tennessee or if the, you know, the teacher association is scrambling to figure this out. But this is going to, again, like most issues around this, this is to individualize responsibility. This is to move away from collectively working towards peace in our communities and to put it into individual responsibilities where we could blame an individual if there is an accident. We could say, well, that person made a mistake. They should be held responsible for it. So it's, you know, it's many layers of a bad idea, but for one reason, like caller Joanne was saying, it's not a matter of when an accident happens. We know this around gun statistics. It's a matter of that it will happen.
Will.
And I would only hope that it was someone was scared because a gun went off, and more likely it's going to be somebody is shot and killed. Mm-hmm. If not more than one person, many people.
Hey, oh, check Larry. Yeah, Larry from Tennessee. Let's go right where it's happening. Larry from Tennessee, what's happening, friend?
How you doing, man? This is Larry Prophet. I'm one of the badass teachers, and I have fought against this happening for many years. As a matter of fact, the last time they got close to this, I spoke in committee and was accosted by a legislator outside the committee room and basically said I was denying those teachers Second Amendment rights. This has never been about safety. That's Tennessee right. Firearm Association makes the NRA look like a bunch of Girl Scouts. I literally, having run for office before because education is not put where it needs to be, I was told by one of their members that if they could own a tank and put it in their yard, they should be able to do it. They want no laws inhibiting it. And our Senate and our House both expelled people from the chambers because they did not want to hear people telling them how stupid it was while they were doing it. And so they threw all the protesters out, people who were there to have their voice raised. And it's crazy. And I've told people, when guns come in my school, I'm through teaching. And I'm not going to do it, man, because how are you going to take care of somebody? Let's say you have a teacher who's carrying. They've got to carry. They've got to carry, or it does no good to have it anyway. But if you're carrying, and let's say you slip, a bullet ricochets, it hits a student, a peer, who's going to pay for the medication it'll take to help you sleep the rest of your life? Because if I shot one of my students or one of the teachers, and I'm telling you, more guns don't help. I live in a gun. I have three guns myself. We live in a county where there are plenty of guns. If more guns helped, we wouldn't have to worry about people getting to our schools. So more guns does not help. And so we just finally defeated the voucher bill again, and people were so excited about that, but I knew this gun thing was coming, and it's hard to be excited. And I tell you, man, I was glad to see when Mike posted that this was going to be on tonight, and I was sure wanting to get on there. But I'm telling you, you can't find 10 teachers and 10 of them out of 10 will not tell you they want this. Now, I have met teachers that do. Oh, I think it's okay. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man. I know what kind of pressure teachers are under over test scores. I sure don't want to have it with a gun.
Larry from Tennessee, man, you know,
thanks for being a teacher.
Thanks for being a teacher and man, stay in there. Teacher Joanna, I see you got the look there of like, and you put in the text, I can't believe this is a choice. What do you say to teacher Larry?
Well, too, thank you for calling in. It is wonderful to hear directly from a badass teacher. That has direct experience. We know what that means, the bats. Just hearing him again, hearing another educator explain all the scenarios that we, you know, to me, it's like we're inviting these problems. And it's like, oh my God, we have so many problems and that we have to just, this is really hard for me. It's hard to think like these are the conversations we are having to have. I appreciate and recognize what Johnny and Larry both brought up, that this is at, you know, because you get stuck in the loop, like this actually isn't about schools. And that's always hard to reconcile with.
Man, busted pencils, fully leaded, education talk, educated.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
This special is presented exclusively by Civic Media on WLCX La Crosse, WCFW HD2 The Tap, Chippewa Falls, WRCE Richland Center, and WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
The first of four forums is being held on the UW-Stevens Point campus. Your moderator tonight is William Garcia, chair of the 3rd Congressional District in La Crosse County. Now, let's go live to UW-Stevens Point and moderator William Garcia.
CD Democrats of Wisconsin. That means I'm chair of the 18 counties, mostly in western Wisconsin, right across the Mississippi, right on the border of the Mississippi, that make up the 3rd Congressional District. It is our job and our hope to elect Democrats up and down the ballot in 2024 November. So I want to thank you for being here today. It's my pleasure to introduce our moderator. Will Shredder is a graduate of UW-Stevens Point. While at school, he served extensively on student government and as student body president. Currently, Will works at University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point in the College of Natural Resources, and he serves as a volunteer for local Boy Scout and Girl Scout troops on the Friends of the Schmeagle Reserve Board and recently elected to the school board in Stevens Point. Ladies and gentlemen, William Shredder.
All right, thank you, William, and thank you all for coming today. I'm rather tall, so we'll see if this works. So this is, again, hosted by the 3rd Congressional District Democratic Party and also the Portage County Democrats. Each candidate will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to answer our questions, along with a 3 minute opening statement. We have drawn names by randomly to see who goes first for that. They will be held up by our wonderful timekeeper, William, right there, for cards. There's also answer or time for possible follow-ups. And then we'll also have a couple of breaks at 7 and at 7:30 for the station ID of the stations that are hosting this for us. So our first person to go for an opening statement will be Rebecca Cook, and I will give it away to you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I want to start off by thanking our 3rd CD Chair William and the Portage County Democrats for all the work that you put into organizing this forum and the forums across the 3rd Congressional District. I'm Rebecca Cook. I grew up on a dairy farm over in the Eau Claire area. I grew up showing cows and 4-H, but like a lot of Wisconsin farmers, we had to sell our cows because of the price of milk and competition with larger dairies, which was tough, you know, and is a story of a lot of Wisconsin farmers. And it's a key reason why I'm running for Congress, to really take on corporate monopolies that are robbing us of our farming heritage and crippling rural communities. But we're tough, and we pick ourselves up. I worked to put myself through college before coming back home to Eau Claire, where I started my own small business that I ran for 7 years before closing it in 2022, really competing against cheap Chinese goods. I ended up starting my own hospitality business and also run a nonprofit organization that supports women entrepreneurs throughout 19 counties. And I waitress 3 nights a week while I'm running for Congress by day. And you don't see a lot of folks with my kind of background stepping up to run for Congress or in Congress itself. You see a lot of career politicians. You see a lot of elitists. You see a lot of radicals like Derek Van Orden, who is very much a bully. He yells at Senate pages, he reduces librarians to tears, and he lacks the temperament to represent us in Congress. We need someone who's going to reinstill faith in our democracy. And that's another reason why I'm running. We deserve a representative who is a doer, who's going to roll up their sleeves to get things done for folks in western Wisconsin, not start a fist fight with folks that are on, you know, the same party lines or even, you know, across the aisle. I'm going to deliver on kitchen table issues like increasing access to affordable quality health care, taking on corporate monopolies that are price gouging consumers at the gas pump, at the grocery store, and in our housing market. And I'm going to defend reproductive freedoms. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation tonight and talking about issues that are important to all of us here in the 3rd CD. So thank you.
Thank you. Our next candidate to go for an opening statement is Eric Wilson.
Good evening. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and thank you, William, for putting everything that you do into the third CD, and it's exciting to be here. My name is Eric Wilson, and I am running because of actually gun violence. November of 2022, there was a shooting at Club Q in Colorado Springs. It was an attack on my LGBTQ community. That was the night that I said, enough is enough, and we deserve better. That was the moment that I was inspired to figure out what I can do and jump into this, because I think we all have that moment. There's a lot of despair out there, but it truly is, what can we do? I come from a family of coaches, teachers, small business owners, just north of Eau Claire, and truly understood the value of helping others and standing with each other. I went to school down in Madison and studied economics. I got some medical issues. I had a reconstructive surgery on my chest, and I got infections in both sides. At 19, I had 11 surgeries under my belt, and I came out of it with medical debt. This system is not set up for us. We are putting children, we are putting young adults in situations where they have to fight for not only their life, but their finances. And we can do better as a society. And so I'm running for Medicare for All because I want to make sure that everyone has the ability to not just survive, but to thrive. It's talking about the difficult issues that are at the forefront of everyone's minds. We can't avoid them any longer. It's talking about responsible gun ownership. It's talking about a ceasefire. It's talking about Medicare for All. It's fighting for our democratic values, which are taking care of people. If we tie everything back to that, that's why I'm in this race, because I care about everyone. And I want to make sure that no one feels isolated like I have had to growing up. I want to make sure that people have what they need to be their best selves and to rebuild Wisconsin's community that we have gotten away from. We should be able to grab a beer and talk about the difficult things and not just fight like Derek makes us. Mm-hmm. And so I'm Eric Wilson, I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to be involved in the conversation about our community here.
Thank you. And our last candidate to give an opening statement is Katrina Shankland.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much to 3rd Congressional. It is on. I'm going to start over. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much to our 3rd CD Democrats, as well as UWSP for hosting us. Thank you to Civic Media for live streaming this. I'm Katrina Shankland, and I'm running for Congress to build on the work we've all done together in the state of Wisconsin. I have been a legislator here in Portage County for the last 12 years, and I've been incredibly proud to represent 60,000 people here in central Wisconsin. And I'm running for Congress now to not only take on Derek Van Orden, but extremists like him in Congress who care more about fighting with each other than they do about fighting for us. I am running to be a voice for all of us, to make government work for us. We have a congressional session right now that is the least productive since the Great Depression, because House Republicans, led by chaotic and extremist Derek Van Orden, are getting in the news for all the wrong reasons, whether it's screaming at U.S. Capitol pages or screaming during an intelligence briefing. We need smart, tough, experienced, and battle-tested candidates from every district in our country to take on the serious, pressing problems that keep the people of Wisconsin up at night. In the state legislature, I've represented a purple district. I've won 6 elections. I've outperformed the top of the ticket every time. In 2022, I was the Democrat who got the most votes. Why is that important here in Portage County? Because we get one shot at taking out a radical extremist like Derek Van Orden, who compared abortion to genocide and wants to take away even more of our rights, like repealing the Affordable Care Act. So I am running to be a champion, not only for our democracy and freedoms, but to codify Roe v. Wade into law, to make sure that all of you have a voice in government, whether it's about Social Security and making Medicare and the Affordable Care Act work even more for folks, or whether it's protecting and holding the lines on our voting rights, our freedoms. And you can count on that, because I've already done that here in the state. I've passed 225 bills into law, all while serving in the minority. And you can take that to the bank. So I'm excited to be here tonight and looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to move into our questions. We have 10 total questions. We'll see if we can get to all of them tonight. As a reminder, each question, you will have 90 seconds, which I'm sure is plenty of time to answer these very complex issues that we're facing as a nation. I'm just going to take these names and pick a random one, and then we'll just go clockwise from there. Rebecca, you get to start. Our first question is about national paid leave. Will you support a national sick leave law that covers all workers?
The answer is yes. When you have a sick family member or you're expecting, I was actually just talking with my mom preparing for tonight, and she was reminding me of when my grandfather was sick and needing to take time off work to be able to care for him. And I'm supportive of the Family Medical Leave Act, but this is also not a one-size-fits-all policy. So thinking about how we can get not just our largest employers, but small and mid-sized businesses to be able to adopt policies like that, I think is really important. And that's in contrast to someone like Derek Van Orden, who has so many anti-worker, anti-family policies. I'm going to be working to deliver for those very types of things when I'm in Congress.
Thank you. Eric Wilson?
Yes, absolutely. It's pretty simple, I think. It's very common sense, though. We need to be supporting people. We are not machines. Maybe some of us, but we might be getting there. But we're not machines, and we need time off. And so that should just be across the board. I mean, we need to be able to go to the doctor's appointments. We need to be able to take care of family members. We need to be able to live. And it's pretty common sense. Like, I mean, I can go on and on about it, but it's straightforward of, yes, absolutely. And we need to expand and not just give it the little basics of, say, a week. Like, we should have 2 to 3 to 4 weeks worth of leave to be able to take care of the ones that we love and ourselves.
Thank you. Katrina Shankland.
So the United States is one of the few industrialized countries in the world that doesn't have a paid family leave program. And we know that only about 25% of folks who are privately employed have access to any kind of paid family leave through their employer. In fact, recently we saw an organizing campaign at UW System specifically for paid family leave. One of the UW System regents said he had no idea they weren't already eligible for family leave that was paid. And that really speaks to the crux of the issue. We need champions to understand that it isn't just about saying yes, but it's about knowing the Build Back Better Act, which passed the House but not the Senate component, specifically had paid family leave in it, 12 weeks. And unfortunately, some Democratic senators decided that that was too much for them. And I think we need champions who are willing to say, hey, when you're sick, when you have a baby, when you have to be a caregiver while also holding your job because you're the breadwinner for your family, you deserve several weeks or months of paid family leave. And on the state level, I was an author of a bill for years to create an insurance program specifically to help people pay in for their paid family leave. And I'll be a champion on this as well as earned sick days in Congress.
Thank you. And I actually do have a follow-up to that one. So it's easy to promise something, but how would you go about getting that done in Congress? And we'll just start with Rebecca again.
How would I go about getting that done in Congress?
Yes.
Like I said, I support bills like the Family Medical Leave Act, and that's something that I would be supportive of and vote for.
Thank you. Eric?
Yeah, the legislation is there. We just need the votes. And so, like, it's working with our colleagues, it's working with people to push them over the edge to get it across the line. Like, and so, yes, it's building a coalition of people that understand that this is what we need to have a thriving economy, country, humanity. So it's getting people on board. The legislation is there.
Thank you. And Katrina.
I think recognizing that there are several bills out there, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York has a paid family leave and medical act, as well as the Build Back Better Act, which I mentioned. There's specifically a paid family leave program
enacted by the House but not concurred on by the Senate in Congress. And where was the sticking point? It was U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat. That really speaks to when we choose in Democratic primaries to vote for our values, we should be asking clear questions like, do you support paid family leave or not? And how are you going to get it done? And I will be that champion.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to our second question. And Eric, you will start with this one. The second question is about child care. The child tax credit had a notable positive effect on children and young families while it was in place post-pandemic. We are coming to recognize the critical need of young families to have improved access to child care services in our communities. According to the U.S. Census, in our county, as in Portage County, there are 1,440 children under the age of four, and there are only 300 licensed daycare slots. Mm-hmm. This shortage of licensed daycare is an issue typically of greatest impact on women. Has your campaign offered a position or plan that might improve these circumstances that are keeping women from the workplace?
Yes, we need to be advocating for everyone. We started kindergarten here in Wisconsin, and so it's continuing on fighting back to what we started. It's making sure that after there is paid maternity leave, we are giving all children the opportunity that they need. It's, Roe was talking about, you can tell by the age of six if someone will end up going to college or not. And so it's making sure that we are putting it, we can do it. We can put it in place to make sure that there is childcare until there is preschool and moving on. It not only helps our economy, it allows people to, all families, to have the opportunity to be working, to do what they want to do. Childcare currently is not only inaccessible, it's unaffordable. I mean, you're paying a college tuition for children, and it's not sustainable for families. It's, for people my age, it's a big deterrent of having kids because we simply can't afford them. But as a community, as a society, we can afford it, and that's how we help invest in younger generations and continuing to build our communities.
Thank you. Katrina?
I have supported Wisconsin's child care counts, which was funded by the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA dollars. Governor Tony Evers put in $340 million every 2 years until this most recent budget, since the pandemic, when child care really became access became even more exacerbated than usual. We saw that without child care counts, which raised wages for our early childhood educators, 40% of child care providers in Wisconsin would have either shut their doors altogether or raised tuition to the point of unaffordability to many working families. I have a constituent who told me she's a dentist in a rural community. She has three kids, one on the way. She can't find a child care slot for the baby. So that dentist will be forced to shut her doors if she can't find the childcare slot. And all those working families who are waiting for that dental appointment months, if not a year, will be forced to find new ways to make things work too. So this has rippling effects not only on the care economy, but the entire economy. I would champion not only supporting a federal block grant for additional support like childcare counts, but there are a number of bills, including the child tax credit, that I've supported on both the state level and voted for it, as well as would support in Congress. And I'm going to work really hard to not only work with employers, but employees to make sure that we have affordable childcare as well as well-paid childcare providers so everyone has access to childcare.
Thank you. And Rebecca.
You know, I think that the pandemic really put a magnifying glass on the childcare issues that we have in this district and across the country. When I was running for Congress last cycle, I had an opportunity to sit down with some childcare providers in Black River Falls, all independent providers that were providing out of their home and coming together to create a childcare cooperative so that they could make higher wages as providers and also offer more services. I also met with some folks in La Crosse that had an interesting approach, a cooperative model of bringing small businesses together. A lot of times you see larger businesses have the capacity to offer childcare for their employers. And I'm interested in these kind of innovative ideas from people within their own communities that are seeing these challenges and coming together and thinking about how can we get more federal funding to back some of these issues. This is also, you know, it's a workforce issue. Then this is what we talked about, in particular, keeping women out of the workforce. I'm somebody that is supportive of the child care tax credit, and there's been opportunities for extension of that, but those are the types of exact bills that Derek Van Orden has not been supporting, but that you can count on me to support when I'm in Congress.
Thank you. Our next question is about the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, which we love to talk about here in Wisconsin for some reason. And our first candidate to talk about that will be Katrina Shankland. Our current congressman has stated, the crisis at the southern border is Biden-made and Biden-manufactured. Among other things, he suggests building a border wall and ending catch and release. Most do agree that something needs to be done to address this crisis. What recommendations would you suggest and be willing to support to tackle border control?
This is why people hate politicians, because people like Derek Van Orden chose to reject a bipartisan deal that was compromised in good faith upon both Democrats and Republicans, as well as President Biden, who was prepared to sign it. And it really shows that he is not fit to serve us in Congress when he is prepared to reject a deal, and he had the power to not only marshal more resources to our U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents, but also he had the ability with his one vote to support ending the trafficking of fentanyl into our communities across Wisconsin and the country. And I'll tell you, if there's a bipartisan compromise that seems right for Wisconsin and right for working families and seniors and right for the country, I'll vote for it. Unlike Derek Van Orden, who chooses to spend most of his time on Twitter getting into fights with his constituents and calling people names, I think we need real leaders who are focused on delivering solutions. My dad immigrated here in the 80s. That's the last time we had comprehensive immigration reform, and it's because of radical and reckless politicians like Derek Van Orden that were unable to move the needle. I'm a problem solver, and I'm always willing to reach my hand across the aisle on real issues like this, and you can count on me to not only advocate for real solutions, but to call out any politician who chooses to play politics with people's lives and with our security.
Thank you. Rebecca Cook.
For years, we've seen Congress take a patchwork approach to comprehensive immigration reform. I've had an opportunity to build relationships with folks in Arcadia, farm workers in our agricultural industry, as well as many folks who are part of our manufacturing industry that are migrant workers. And, you know, I think that there it's important to secure the border, but also important to recognize what a key part of the workforce that migrant workers are and figuring out how we can have a pathway to citizenship. These are folks that are hard workers that have been paying into a system that they're not seeing the benefits from. And I think it takes people that are willing to work across the aisle to get this done. You know, there has been policy that's been put forth that's bipartisan that Democrats came to the table for, but then Republicans took away because they wanted it to be a talking point for Donald Trump's campaign. And we need people that aren't always going to toe the party line, but that are going to get things done. And, you know, I think really we need to have comprehensive immigration reform to pull folks out of the shadows and to be a part of the communities that they're continuing to contribute to.
Thank you. And Eric Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, Derek's unhinged about this this topic. But it does bring to light something. We need to make sure that we are securing the border. And it actually brings up a good point of we need to be making sure that we have an immigration system and a border that is keeping human life in mind. We shouldn't be caging children. We shouldn't be putting people into camps. We should be doing the systematic thing to actually get the reform and have a system that is acceptable in a timely manner, right? Like, you shouldn't have to wait 10 years just to start the process. That's part of the issue with this. And so I am for a bipartisan bill. I'm making sure that we are doing this reform. I am for making sure that we don't have fentanyl coming across the southern border. I am for abolishing ICE. I want to make sure that we are doing things to rebuild families, not tear them apart. Immigration is needed in this country. We have sectors that absolutely require agriculture, hospitality. We need to have an acceptable system to make sure that these communities and these industries are able to not just survive. We need to have, we need to move forward quickly in creating it.
Thank you. And Katrina. Or did we go already? My bad. Sorry.
I can go again if you want.
We make mistakes. We make mistakes. So our next question is about inflation, and we will start with Rebecca Cook. Inflation rose last month. Some things we can help to control and some things we don't have control over as a government or a potential congressperson. What are some things that you can do, however, to help control higher costs for individuals with everyday needs such as food and energy? Take it away.
Absolutely. This is something that I understand all too well, having been a small business owner and really have had having had to grapple with a lot of the rising costs and the ways that they impacted my small business. And what it really comes down to is having a backbone in Congress and taking on corporations that are price gouging consumers off the backs of their workers. You're hearing so much about these reports of these record profits that corporations are having. And we need to have legislators who are willing to step up to enforce antitrust legislation. You see a hyper consolidation in so many different industries, in agriculture where there's four main, you know, meat processors. And so, you know, thinking about how can we enforce those antitrust laws and not cozying up to special interests like someone like Derek Van Orden is doing and taking dollars from big corporate interests in voting in support of bills that are important to them. And that's not something that I'll ever do. And as somebody that's ran a small business and somebody that understands what working families need in West Central Wisconsin.
Thank you. Eric Wilson.
Yeah, having an economics background, I understand where and how we got here. Big corporations do not care. They are in it just for their bottom line. They have equity companies coming in where they strip everything out, they raise the prices, and then they drop out. It is all just flowing to the top. And so it's making sure that we have antitrust laws, that we are breaking up big corporations. We will systematically always move back to consolidation because there is economies of scale. And so it is the role of our government and the role of elected officials to make sure that we are putting the guardrails in place to break them up when they get too big. Because at that point, they set their prices, right? We're seeing it in housing. We're seeing it in agriculture, in food, in everything. And so it's breaking it up. It's also fixing our tax system and making sure that corporations have a progressive tax. I mean, that will help control some of these issues.
Thank you. And Katrina Shanklin.
Is it inflation or is it greedflation? We've also heard shrinkflation, but I prefer greedflation because the vast majority of these, what current companies are calling, you know, inflation are actually coming. If you look at the last few quarters, they're almost entirely related to corporate greed. And that's important because it means we can do something about it. When they say it's supply chain issues and we look into it and it's actually not, we know that they're just using consumers to continue to get wealthier while hoping that you'll have cereal for dinner, like one CEO recently said, because of the cost of groceries. I have constituents, I saw one in the last two times in the last 2 weeks, who brought up the cost of meat. She knows it by the penny. She knows the cost of milk and eggs by the penny. You know why? Because she is tracking when and how she can finally afford to get hamburger. That's not okay. We have work to do as a country. And here's what we can do, and I'm really excited about it, because our U.S. Senator, Tammy Baldwin, is taking the lead on this with other great senators like Elizabeth Warren. There is a bill specifically to empower and help the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, to enforce price gouging laws. We need consumer protections. We need watchdogs, people who will have your back every day of the week. And that's something I've committed to because representing you all here in Central Wisconsin, I know what we're up against and I know what it's going to take to get things done in Congress because the powerful special interests sure like to hand out money to people who want to be their lackeys, and I'm not one of them.
Thank you. And just to fill out some time before our ID read, I'll ask a small follow-up here. So this inflation issue really hurts municipalities, school districts, and counties. So real quick, what can you do as a congressperson to help those issues?
Starting with me?
Yes, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that there's a way in which we can allocate federal dollars to be able to support small municipalities. We have a large budget to be able to work with, to be able to send those types of resources to West Central Wisconsin. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to be able to do that.
Thank you. Eric?
Yeah, I mean, it's also energy. Energy is a huge inflator of this, and so it's making sure that we are putting caps on things and giving, right, like it's a needed good, and so it's enforcing what we already have.
Thank you. And Katrina?
I agree that inflationary costs like energy and healthcare are really hurting our municipal governments and counties, but I also know that the state is not paying its fair share to our local municipalities. That's why in the legislature, I championed our new shared revenue law. So every penny on the nickel goes to every town, village, city, and county in the state of Wisconsin for specifically core government services.